Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, rock fans. Welcome to another episode of Ages of Rock podcast. This is number 10, and tonight we're going to give you something really special. We have a special guest. His name is Mitch LaFon, and we're going to go one on one on one on one with Mitch LaFon. We'll explain a little bit more about that later, but here you go. Enjoy the show. All right. Hey, welcome to the show. Tonight we're going to be spending some time with a friend of ours, Mitch LaFon, from One on One with Mitch LaFon. You can find him there and on Talking Metal, and a great guy. He is a rock journalist, and he seems to interview everybody under the sun, which is awesome. Some really cool people, obscure people, and just people that have a ton of knowledge. So it's awesome to have him on the show. So what we're going to do, I think, is just start with some questions, and we're going to turn the tables because Mitch does this all the time. So we're going to let him be the guy answering the questions. And as usual, our show is not scripted, so we don't share information beforehand. So you just never know what can happen. We did kind of get this one a little bit more scripted just so we could ask questions that were logical. But so you ready, Mitch?
Yeah, I'll do like some of the best interviews and just give you yes/no answers. And then
there you go. There you go. Do you like the growth?
I'm not sure if it's my style, but I figure I'll let it go for a while. It's winter. There's nobody to impress. It's cold.
Well, the question is, are you to the itchy stage?
Yeah, it's driving me crazy, but it has not compelled me to make the effort to shave yet.
Yeah,
there you go. It is effort, that's for sure. All right, so hey, can you tell us a little bit about how you got started in, you know, the rock journalism world and what kind of drove you to that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for me, it starts back in 1980 in June. I was 11 years old, and I managed to set up an interview with Gene Simmons of Kiss. And the interview went off well, which, you know, was great, and it got out in the press and stuff like that. And years later, around 97, we made a tribute to Ace Frehley album. And I was sitting in the studio with LA Guns and Bruce Kulick and other people. And I shared the story. And then after that, when I started going to shows, they kept saying to me, "Hey, you're the Gene Simmons kid. You're that kid, you know?" Of course, I wasn't a kid by 1997, right? And you know, then this magazine, Brave Words, in Toronto got started. And, you know, people were giving me information that I was giving over to Brave Words, and I was always right. They go, "Man, you predicted the name of this album. You predicted that. You predicted this." And it was all done with permission. I wasn't going behind anybody's back. And eventually Brave Words said, "Instead of just feeding this stuff, you just want to work for us?" And I said, "Yeah, sure. Why not? Let's do that." And I guess the rest is just pretty much history. I've just kept on doing interviews since then, and I've done my own thing. I've done stuff for Brave Words. I've done stuff for other magazines. It just keeps going, and I enjoy it. So that's pretty much it. There was no training. There was no school. I mean, I did a master's in psychology, educational psychology on top of that. So definitely not rock and roll. And, you know, I just love it. It's a passion. From a fan standpoint, I love talking to these bands. I love promoting the music, and I do it very selfishly. You know, if I don't talk, or I always felt this way, especially in the 90s and early 2000s, if I didn't talk about LA Guns, nobody else would. If I didn't talk about Warrant, nobody else would. Mm-hmm. And I want those bands to exist. I want them to keep going. I want, you know, when I talk about Gothard or Inglorious or all these unknown bands, because I want people to know about them so that they'll exist, so that I can enjoy their music. I mean, it's really exactly. That simple, right?
Yeah, because we all know, you know, music has changed so much. The ability to get music and you know, the promotion of it and stuff like that is so different today than it was back in the 90s and the early 2000s, and especially in the 80s. I mean, that era, you know, we talked about this before. MTV drove the music in the 80s,
right?
You know, and it just doesn't exist anymore because I don't know what the hell MTV's driving, but it's not music. So
reality shows.
I don't even know. Does it, I don't even know if it still has a channel. So it's blocked on my TV for ignorance purposes.
Yeah.
But, So can you talk a little bit about, you know, One-on-One and Talking Metal and those shows that you're doing?
Yeah. Listen, the One-on-One is my own show. That's, I've gone out on my own to interview the people I want to interview. And I put it together twice a week, and it's really free form. It's unedited. I really like the unedited. People say, oh, you should make it a 10-minute package and edit in the best parts and all that. And yeah, that could, that certainly would be interesting to have a nice tight package. But I like the fact that you can hear an artist in his natural element and hear a story develop without me interjecting what I think is the smartest quote or the best thing. Because sometimes it's not always the best quote that I would pick. So I like that it's free form like that. And it's part of the Talking Metal Digital Network. Mark Striegel, who worked on, you know, VH1's that metal show and stuff, came to me after I left Three Sides and said, listen, I've got this Talking Metal thing. We have an infrastructure. We're set up on Spreaker, Stitcher, iTunes, yada, yada, yada. Would you like to be part of it? I think it'd be beneficial. And I said, yeah, but I just left a show where somebody was telling me what to do, how to do it, when to do it. How, I don't want to do that. I really want it to be my thing. And he goes, yeah, it's fine. I don't care. Just yeah. do whatever. And you use my infrastructure, and we'll figure it out. And so that's what happened. So that's where the Talking Metal. And of course, Mark, when he does his show, once in a while, will call on me to co-host or guest host and add my two cents to whatever the topic may be.
That's pretty cool. I've listened to that quite a bit too. So, you know, depending on topics and things like that, depends on what I end up listening to it. You know, definitely it's cool, you know, hearing you on different venues, in different venues and in a little bit different topics. I think the cool thing about One-on-One too is it is definitely people that you can tell it's your love of music and, you know, an interest that drives it. The interviews, I think, really are, you know, kind of cool from that factor. It's a fan based thing, like you said. Right. Definitely not somebody trying to figure out how to write an article that's going to get published or something like that. It's just about, let's have a conversation, sit around and talk, and what cool things come out. So there's
but
been
I
some
do
really,
get published
great,
quite a
really
bit.
Great ones.
That's the fun part about it is that if you look on Brave Words or sometimes on Blabbermouth, yeah, or Melodic, yep, Rock, my name gets out there quite a bit.
Yep.
So I think people are enjoying the format. I think people are enjoying the fact that they're not being sold, you know, a canned ham. They're getting the whole pig.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I can use the expression.
Oh, and, I love it.
Yeah.
I'm a hillbilly, so that works out well.
Right. I mean, would you rather have a nice slice of bacon or Spam, right? You want the – anyway. So so there you go.
Well, I'm – so most of these interview shows too, you know, you get somebody and they're always, they try to get these people when they're on top or they got something to promote and stuff like that. And I've seen like a lot of your interviews, it's just because, you know, you maybe want to talk to somebody, or, you know, you don't, it doesn't have to be topical at that point, you know?
No, it doesn't have to be topical, but it is about getting people an attention and a limelight. When I talk to, you know, Alan Frew of Glass Tiger or Nathan James of Inglourious and so on, it's because I think, hey, it'd be cool if other people knew about these guys.
Sure.
You know, why should it be a cult or five friends to know about it? So, and you know, at the end of the day, you also can't have Rudolf Schenker on of the Scorpions on every episode. I'd love to.
Yeah.
You can't. So you have to blend it in the bigger marquee names with some of the people that are trying to get established. So that's what I try to do.
It's kind of like with this show too. You know, we're not trying to set into a certain genre. You know, we'll talk about, you know, a certain group some, you know, one day or a certain genre, but it changes. You know, and the thing is, you can't eat one thing every day. You can't have hamburgers every day. You got to have something different. You know, and that's one thing with us. And we're not, you know, we'll sit around and talk about, you know, I do listen to some stuff that probably I don't want people to know about, which is another upcoming, you know, thing. But you know, we all have our guilty pleasures. But the whole point is, we talk about everything, you know, anything that's done well, put it that
and,
way.
And the other thing that I like in the interviewing that I do is, and I never try to push an agenda, you know, I'll listen to what the artist is saying and I'll pick up on something and then I'll go down that road. There are a lot of times where I'll have questions in my head, because I don't actually write them down. I have notes and stuff, and I formulate them as I go along. And then artists will take a left turn, and I go, oh, all right, well, we're going to go down this path. I'm not trying to trap them. I'm not trying to make them look foolish or say, tell me about why this album sucked. No, we're not. It's not about it. Because you get people like that who'll write in and say, you don't ask the tough questions, or you didn't trap them on, why didn't you? Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, but that's not the point. Right. The point is to have a pleasant conversation, and it's to promote whatever needs to be promoted, and discover something new and interesting. And it's also nice just to hear the person tell his story or her story. It happens. Sure. And as far as musical genres, I like the fact that I can go from a pop artist to a death metal artist, because it's challenging. There's a lot of the artists I talk to that I actually don't like. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. Their music doesn't speak to me, but I love talking to them to find out, you know, what makes them tick? Where does that music come from? And it stretches the ability. If I only did, five Warrant bands in a week, well, at some point you go, oh, well, Mitch is the guy who interviews Warrant. Great. Right. But yeah. Mitch is the guy who interviews Glass Tiger and Warrant and Scorpions and Venom. And you go, oh, okay, that's different. Right.
Yeah, it's cool. You know, and you know, getting some of the new people on there too that are up and coming, I think it really gives them a voice and an outlet that right now they don't have. A lot of them, you know, you're stuck. They're not getting marketing money and push and that kind of stuff.
Not at all. And
yeah, and that's a huge issue.
And I've been lucky enough that sites like Melodic Rock and sites like Brave Words and Blabbermouth and other ones will pick up my interviews, even if it's not, you know, the guy from Metallica, even if it's not the guy from Kiss. And that's good too. It shows a trust in the ability, and it's a nice reciprocal kind of agreement. I'll give them content and they'll push whoever. And so that's nice.
Yeah. Well, and the good thing, like the one you did a couple weeks ago with Andre Augustine, I think that's the right name.
That's the right name.
Yeah,
part two was in the can, by the way.
Oh, cool. That was a great interview. I mean, great article, you know, great interview. And it was picked up by a bunch of people too. I saw a bunch of blurbs on a variety of different things from that interview as well. Neat stuff. That's the kind of stuff, like you said, that to me is just, that's just cool as hell. You know, the inside stuff that you're not going to get by asking the questions about, you know, what color do they like of this and what do you like of that? And,
Augustine as well. He's known, especially in the Kiss world, as being the tour manager, roadie, bouncer, whatever, on the Revenge tour and on the Reunion tour. And it's easy to get into the interview and just say, hey, tell me about Kiss. And I don't think that would have gotten a lot of mileage. When you start talking about working with Run DMC and being a Jet, you know, a New York Jet, a team that I happen to not like, and you start getting those angles, it paints a much vaster canvas. You know, it's nice to see that, hey, Andre's not just a guy who was Gene's bodyguard. He was this and that and set up this strategy and set up that strategy. And concert security today has a lot to do with what Andre did before Kiss. You know, those yellow T-shirts, the hiring of good-looking people. Because it's true, when you see a good-looking security guard, you are less likely to get into a fight than if you see this nasty, because people react, like it or not, they react to first impressions and you know, smart strategy from Andre.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then like too, whenever you do those interviews with people like that, you know, the questions that a regular person would ask have been asked a million times.
Right.
We know the answers to those questions.
Well, you know, that's one thing I do in my prep. Is I look at different interviews on different sites and stuff, and you know, questions that come up 87 times, I'll try to avoid. Not purposely. Sometimes they have to be asked, and they have to be approached from a different angle to get a different answer. So you see sometimes, but there are other times you go, really, do I really need to ask, you know, Rudolf Schenker what his favorite Scorpions album is?
Sure.
I mean, do we? No. So yeah, part of the prep is to look at what's out there and to see if there's too much of the same thing and then try to avoid that.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, Dennis, you had a couple of questions, I think, didn't you?
Yeah, real quick. I want to talk about your the World with Heroes, your Kiss tribute when you did for your, for cancer care.
Yeah. I've got six left.
Do you, I seen a while back you said you found a case of them in your closet, and I was like,
oh. That first of all, is absolutely true. When we have a walk-in closet downstairs, you know, in the living room, right. And I had put all the boxes in there when I got them because the wife said, you ain't leaving these hanging, you know. And somehow, I guess my kids, behind the toy box that's in there, they had slid one. They must have moved it over or something. And so we cleaned it out, and I found this box, and I go, holy mackerel, I still got 50 of these buggers. But yeah, I've actually got like six left. They're right there. In fact, right behind me.
I tell you what, I have a copy of that, except for I loaned it to a friend. Oh, all look. No, that's my friend.
it's a album.
One of these days, I'll get it back from Bill. But no, basically, I was going to. I said, now that you said that you had worked on that Ace Frehley, you know, this wasn't your first time around. I was curious about the trials and tribulations of getting this thing together. I mean, was it originally going to be a double album, or you just had so much input
No.
that it had to be a double album?
My original plan, because I know that you have to pay the mechanical licensing and it gets very expensive.
Sure.
And I didn't want to run costs. The idea was to raise money, not lose money. I said to myself, I am going to do 12 songs because 10 songs is not enough and 15 songs is, you know, it's too much. I'll do 12 songs. And I sent out emails to 12 rock star friends, which I figured, yeah, I'll ask them and no problem. And we'll get this done. And the 12 said, yeah. And I went, okay, great. And then from the 12, they said, hey, how about if my buddy did a version? How about if this guy and this? And of course, their buddies of these rock star friends are not Sam the plumber. It's other rock star friends.
Yeah.
And they went, okay. And I said, all right, sure, why not? And from that, more came in. And then finished versions of songs came in. And I went, well, they just sent me a whole version of, you know, whatever, Beth. And I went, what am I going to do? Tell them no now?
Right.
And you know, the Pledge Music campaign, the financing, because part of the money was to pay for the manufacturer, wasn't set up for 40 songs, 40 mechanical licenses. And it was like, oh, all right. But it went to 231% past its goal. So it ended up actually paying for, you know, the paying of the manufacturer. It was about $3,000 or $4,000. I mean, it was, you know, but I got a lot of good deals. So no, it was supposed to be 12 songs, and it grew, and it grew,
wow.
And it grew, and then it came out, and it got a lot of media attention, and then other people wrote in and said, can we still do something? I was like, but, yeah, but it's done. They go, how about you do a part? Anyway, I ended up putting those on iTunes as a deluxe edition. The deluxe edition has 51 tracks, but those ones came in after. It wasn't about leaving something on or hurting somebody's feeling, right, or anything like that.
Actually, I think I got the one with the 51. I bought that off iTunes, and then I bought the CD also. So I've got actually both versions of it.
Yeah, and thank you for doing that, by the way.
Oh, I'll tell you what, though. It was – there's some songs on here that are phenomenal. I mean, to be honest, I mean, it's really funny how there was different thoughts and takes of different songs.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites is the Cold Gin – which was from Dawkins.
Don Dawkins.
Yeah, Dawkins.
There was the L.A. Guns version. Well, the L.A. Guns version is on the deluxe edition.
Yes. But the Cold Gin, I think the one with Don Dawkins, it is so true to form as far as the music's concerned. It is very, very raw. There's no echo. You know what I'm saying? It's just basic guitar, drums, bass. It was really good. And I tell you, the other one that really caught my eye was that Sure Know Something. The guy,
wasn't that fantastic?
That, I tell you what, that,
see,
guitar
that,
player,
that's one of those.
Who was that? The guitar player,
Chris Buck. He's in a band called Buck and Evans in the UK, and in fact, they don't do rock music. They
really,
they do sort of a blues Janis Joplin kind
right.
of thing. And yeah, but that was one where I didn't ask Buck, and I didn't ask the person who sent it to me.
Sure.
You know, I was talking to them, and it blah, 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 and they said, "Oh, well, And the song showed up finished, and they said, well, if you like it, please include it. And I went,
holy crap. I mean,
I like it.
Like it.
Well, that's track number one.
Well, the thing I liked about it is almost at the very end of it, it gets into almost like a Dave Gilmour, I mean, like a Pink Floyd-y kind of Robin Trier kind of, I mean, well, that lead is just phenomenal. I mean, it's just incredible. Dude, it's just tearing it up at the end.
Well, first of all, check out Buck and Evans. I mean, go to
YouTube.
They are fantastic. They play like you just can't imagine. And the original stuff they do is just fantastic.
Right.
But yeah, it's got a little bit of that Rolling Stones. I think is it Wild Horses. I think it is
sure.
That they mixed into there. And the vocalist is actually, you know, was the bass player in Great White, Tony Montagna.
Okay.
Oh.
He was actually an original singer for Velvet Revolver, but ended up not getting the gig.
Gotcha.
You know, they ended up going with Scott Weiland.
Right.
And I wasn't expecting it. They took the song, which was basically a disco-ish song, and turned it into this blues.
Oh, and it's awesome. Like I said, it's probably one of my favorite songs on the album. Yeah, I really think it's awesome.
The one that I really like that not that I didn't have any expectations for it, but I thought, whatever, it'll be one of those songs. And no offense to the musicians on it, was Shout Mercy,
right,
from Jeff Paris.
Right.
One of the reasons why I thought it was going to be just an average song is because it was a new Kiss song. I wanted to get a song sort of from every era on it.
Sure.
And
excuse me.
You know, that's one song where I pleaded with Jeff. I said, please, please do the new song, you know, because everybody wanted to do Cold Gin. Everybody wanted to do Shout It Out Loud.
Sure.
And I said, I need a, and they said, okay. And I thought, you know, if your heart's not into it and you haven't grown up on it for 40 years, maybe it won't be as inspirational to cut.
Right.
And was I ever wrong? It sounds like Bad Company doing Kiss. I actually prefer that version to the Kiss version. And the Kiss version is great. I mean,
right.
You know, I prefer that version. I think they just really nailed it. You've got, who's on that? Eric Brittingham, Troy Lucetta, Jeff Labar. So two Cinderella guys, a Tesla guy,
right,
and Jeff Paris.
Oh, hell. I mean, that's a lineup right there.
I was going to ask you later to make a super group, but you're just keep naming them.
What the hell? Yeah.
Skip that question.
I'll tell you another real couple one real quick. That Mark Tornello from Accept.
Oh, yeah.
I tell you what, that is the rawest vocal I've heard in a long time. I mean, that was I don't know if you got. I know you've heard it because Alan and I, we went up to Bloomington here about a month ago or so,
something
and
like that.
We listened to the whole album actually on the way up there. So he's heard this whole thing, and I know Bill's heard it. But that's a great tune on there too.
And the funny thing about that is I was looking for a revenge song because I love revenge.
Sure.
And so I asked him if he could do that, and he goes, "Yeah, we used to play that as a cover." And I went, "Oh, all right." And isn't that a great version?
The version? It's just dirty. I mean,
it might actually be better than the original. There's a lot of them. That's unfair to say, maybe, but there's a lot of them that are, let's say, at least at par.
I would say like the Calling Dr. Love. Some of them are just a tad heavier than the originals, and I like that. I mean,
the
like
God
I
said, of Thunder.
Exactly. That's another one. I mean, there's just some great tunes on that album. I mean, like I said, we appreciate you putting it together because, like I said, it's amazing. I really enjoy it.
I'm really proud of it. And I didn't want to just do a tribute album, raise some money, and then 15 years back, look back and say, oh, God, those songs. I wanted it to be something special.
It's fantastic.
I wanted it as a fan to say, that's a good version.
Yeah.
And some of those versions, like you said, the Sure Know Something, the Spit, the Shout Mercy, the I Stole Your Love, done by Sass Jordan.
And that's different, too. That's got a different take on it. And, you know, it's just, it's good. I like it.
And Nowhere to Run. I like the Nowhere. I like, you know, I like them all. I think everybody did their own little take on it. The Oath was done really well. And that's, again, Buck and Evans playing guitar on it.
Oh, cool. Cool. Yep. I'm going to check those guys out. So is there any plans to ever make some more copies of that, re-release it to where people can get copies of that? Or
No. Unless somebody came to me and said, I'll pay to redo it.
Right.
The idea was to, you know, my wife's father passed away from cancer.
Right.
And the hospice care that was given to him was so humane, so kind and stuff. And my wife said, can we donate $100? And I was like, $100 for what they did? I mean, that almost sounds insulting. Here's $100, you know? Right. And I just said, okay, let me see if I can do a little better than that. And let's see if we can. And that's where the genesis came from. And that's where we developed it into this. And not to sound fruity or whatever, but there was a purity to that. And I think if I start reprinting them, then it just sort of becomes, you know, some kind of commercial.
Right.
It loses that. And the people who bought it, listen, it was told. There's 1,000 made, and that's exactly what was made, 1,000. And once they're gone, they're gone. And it would.
No, also, I want my copy back.
Right. but it would also, it would sort of be a distrust to them to say, yeah, I know I told you there'd be 1,000, but now I've got 10,000 more. Ha ha, jokes on you. And that ain't right either. And I think it captures a moment in time that shouldn't be replicated.
It makes it special. It makes it meaningful. It makes it unique. And you know, those guys and, you know, a lot of those guys in there will never play together again or only play together then. And, you know, that uniqueness is what captures, you know, some of that. What's captured is that uniqueness that's on, you know, that's on there. So I think it's just really cool.
And it's unique stuff. Also for my wife. It was a one-time thing for her. And I don't want to say, hey, honey, I'm just going to keep cranking these out because, like, that wasn't the circumstance, right?
Sure.
Right.
But it exists on iTunes. For some reason, it's hard to find on iTunes. It's there.
Well, it is on iTunes, and it is available there then.
Yeah, but I find that if you type in A World with Heroes, it doesn't show up. But if you type in Kiss Tribute, it does.
Huh. Wow.
Well, hopefully it's above Kiss My Ass. That's the worst. Good God.
Well, there was that motivation, too, as a Kiss fan. When I heard Kiss My Ass, I thought, wow, they really took the cheap way out. I mean, they got the cheapest bands. Oh, they paid them the cheapest.
It was terrible. I mean, it was awful.
And I didn't want to have that feeling. I wanted to have something that was proud. And when I started getting these songs, I kept thinking, oh, my God, what if they're horrible? What if they're horrible? And I got that initial version with the Creatures of the Night from Brighton Rock.
Right. That's cool. I like that, too.
Well, you see, I didn't ask for that. They sent it in because they know the guys in Honeymoon Suite, and they know Sean Kelly, and they're Canadian. And I heard it, and I went, oh, my God, that's horrible. And then I had this tune in my head, and I went, what the hell is that? I go, and I couldn't figure it out. And so I started listening to all the songs that had been sent in, and I couldn't. And then it was like the Creatures of the Night, and I went, oh, terrible. I'm not going to use that. And then it came back to me. And it just kept. And I went, you know what? If it keeps doing that, it's because there's something there. I'm not forgetting it, it's because there's something there. And honestly, now it's one of my absolute favorite. I think it's a smart move to have done something different. Just a cookie cutter version would not have worked. First of all, you could not have imitated Eric's drums on that album anyway. No. So to go completely left field made it unique, made it special. And if you looked at it, they by themselves made a video for it that they put up on YouTube, and I think it has like 25 or 50 or some crazy amount of views. So hey, good for them. Yeah. You know, turned out nice.
Well, anyway, you did a real good job. Like I said, I've loved that album. Like I said, I shared it with these guys, and they're like, holy moly, it's great. So no, we really
I'll show you the remaining stock if you want. It's literally arms length. I'd have to slide back and get it if you.
Oh no, that's fine.
Like six of them.
I have one, Dennis. You might want to order it.
I know where you live. I know where you live.
Possession is 9/10 of the law, buddy. In the States, I don't know how it is in Canada.
I've got it on my iPod. I like to get the pack physical. I was like going the other day. I was like going, where is it? I want to show it on the. I'm like thinking, so I text you, go, you got my album? He goes, yeah. And I'm like, damn it.
And you know what? It raised over $30,000 for the hospice.
That's
so awesome.
That's great.
That is phenomenal.
You know,
that's great.
And you can't deny that. I mean, that's, I don't know what they did with it, but it's probably food or a nurse or a, hey, $30,000. That's pretty decent. And that was after all the expenses were paid. I mean, if you include the expenses, it probably The expenses were about $3,000 for the printing, about $1,000 for me. So it's about $35,000 when you know, right. It's not bad.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and working in healthcare, it probably went to people that couldn't afford hospice.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of, we do a lot of fundraising for hospice to, you know, to help those people that can't afford to pay for that kind of stuff. So that's probably where the money went. And, you know, if you're going to give something, that's a great way to give back. So that's awesome.
And
great
it's job. The one thing that shocked me about Canada, because, you know, our healthcare is free. I mean, I had two heart surgeries and I paid not a penny.
Right.
And when it came to the hospice care, I figured, oh, you know, whatever, it's the same thing. And the hospice director said to me, oh, no, we survive uniquely on donations. And I was like, the government doesn't pay like the hospital? They go, no, they don't count this as being medical care. And I went, excuse me?
Exactly.
What? You have nurses, you have doctors, this doesn't count? So that struck me. So yeah, it definitely went right into the system and paid whatever they have to pay. And it was remarkable to me as a Canadian that the folks that need to, you know, to die in dignity is important. You know, to die in a hospital hallway. Right?
Yeah.
So what they do is unique. It's important. It's dignified, and the fact that. For me, our government doesn't kick in. I was like, "Oh, right. That's not right," you know. Yeah. So no, yeah. it was well done.
We did a good deed. So
great. And Alan, you got a couple of questions?
Yeah. First question I've got for you: who has been your favorite guest?
Oh boy, there's three I think that I can name right off the top of the Alice Cooper.
Yes.
First of all, it's Alice Cooper fans. Yeah, I mean, Alice Cooper is by far one of my favorite bands. Loved him from the 70s, the 80s. I was there for Clones. I was there for Data. I was there for when he came back with Poison. So, and he's just so nice, so kind, so professional. I've met him a couple of times. You can't complain. And it's also very challenging because he's one that has a hard time limit. It's 15 minutes. And if you get one question in and he answers it for 14 minutes and 59 seconds, that's it, folks. So you got to play this game where you got to get the questions in, but you got to let him have the answer. Because if you ask too many questions and you don't wait for the answer, it's great. I love Alice. And he's so, so very, very kind and courteous and polite. After that, Rob Halford of Judas Priest. If you go and listen to the conversations I've had with him, mm-hmm. You can just hear him. You can just hear that he's a gentleman. Mm-hmm. He's very kind, he makes you feel like you're his best friend. Right there.
That is awesome. Know?
And then the other one for me would be David Coverdale. Again.
Yeah, that was cool. That was really cool.
He's got great hair. We had this conversation a couple weeks ago. Dude's got great hair.
And he's still got a great set of pipes.
He does. He does.
They deliver live. I mean, they have not stopped delivering live. He picks a great bunch of musicians every time. And I've met him a couple of times, and I've interviewed him a couple of times, you know, basically saying, he shouldn't know me from a hole in the wall, and yet when he sits down and talks with you, he will talk to you as if you've been friends for 40 years.
That's awesome.
And he'll use your first name and say, well, you know, Mitch. And whereas other people say, hey, well. Yeah. And, you know, I know it's just an interview and it's just part of the job. I know we're not best friends, blah, blah, blah. But he makes you feel that way, and that's a special feeling. And the answers he gives you are genuine. He doesn't beat around the bush, and you can ask him anything. I mean, he'll... doesn't matter if it was an album that tanked and you want to talk about it, he'll talk. And if it was his greatest hit, he'll talk. And if it was, you know, a previous relationship, doesn't matter. He's seen everything. He doesn't care. Ask the question. I'll answer it. And I like that.
Right.
Yeah, I remember in the interview he was talking about leaving Deep Purple and going back. And there was some discussion about, you know, who the band members. And he was just flat out just, there. Here it is. You ask a question, here's what I'll tell you what I thought about him.
That's
cool. It was great. I mean, very, very unique guy, it seems. Yeah.
Yeah, and there are other guys where you'll ask a question and you just know, I have to avoid this topic, I have to avoid that. And the publicist will say to you, don't ask about this, and you're like, oh God. And you're on edge, and you're not on edge with Alice. You're not on edge with Coverdale. You're not on edge with Halford. You can't ask for better. You can't ask for more. You know?
That's cool.
Probably why they've been around for 50 years, because they get it.
But the class acts, you know, they're class acts. That's the whole point, you know.
And that'll go a long way.
Exactly.
It will. Yep.
Well, on the opposite end of that spectrum, who is, well, what was the most difficult interview you had to conduct?
Most difficult. Well, there's one in particular that was difficult, and it has nothing to do with the artist. It has to do with the situation. I had been asked by a publicist, do you want to interview Dave Navarro? And I said, sure, not a problem. And that was it. And I didn't get an email back. And 2 days later or 3 days later, the phone rings and it's Dave Navarro. And he goes, hi, it's Dave Navarro. I'm calling in for the interview. And I went, what? What interview? And he goes, oh, my publicist said that you wanted an interview and they had set this time. It's like, oh, all right. But they hadn't told me, or the email got bounced or something. But I didn't know, so I had done no prep. I had done nothing. So I figured, okay, well, let's wing this. That was a good idea.
So and, your name's Dave, right?
and you know he.
What
he,
band were you in?
Yeah, and I don't blame him, but he got in a bad mood right off, like right when I said, oh, I didn't know. Like he got into a bad mood about it. And I don't blame him. I mean, he's a busy guy. He doesn't want to waste his time. Nor would I. Nor would you. So that one was not exactly stellar. And it's not one that was on one-on-one. I mean, we're talking 2001, 2000. I mean, this goes back a long, long time ago. And it was also difficult because now, if I do an interview, I can sort of get on Google and look around. But there was no notes. There was no Wikipedia. There was. So it was dry.
Yeah.
And he was annoyed. And rightly so.
Right.
But not rightly so at me, because I had actually done nothing wrong. I had not been told. But he was annoyed. And I hope he called the publicist after and said, hey, what was that? But that was that one.
Who have you interviewed that you never thought you would get the chance?
Oh God! Half the people I just mentioned,
Bill Algie.
No, no.
A lot of those guys. You know, the very first time I interviewed Alice, I was like working my way up to, can I get Hall for like Ronnie James Dio, for crying out loud? It's like why is Ronnie James Dio talking to me? You know, yeah. So those guys, and there's a few that I still would like to interview, but. Well, pretty much anybody who's been in a really famous band, I always go, wow, I just interviewed Rudolf Schenker twice.
That's cool, though.
This year. Last year, 2015, I got to interview four members of Aerosmith. I mean, had you told me this in 1987, I probably would have fainted and gone, oh, Aerosmith, oh. And you know, I interviewed Joe Perry. I interviewed Tom Hamilton not once,
yeah,
not twice. Three times. Who else was there? Joey Kramer, and I'm supposed to actually interview Brad Whitford in the next little bit.
Cool.
So, hey,
that's awesome.
You never know unless you ask.
Interviewing Joe Perry was pretty sweet. I mean, it's Joe Perry.
Yeah, exactly.
Anybody that's in Kiss cool. or Aerosmith or Cheap Trick or Kiss. I interviewed Rick Nielsen a few years
I love
before. Yeah, you know,
love Cheap Trick. Yeah, they're just awesome.
Rick was a little difficult.
Have you never interviewed anybody from Cheap Trick?
I've interviewed Rick.
Oh, you interviewed Rick? Yeah, that would be cool. It'd be interesting to interview Robin Zander after the Bunny Carlos come
recently. But you know what? I was really surprised how Bunny was very just out. This is what the deal is. Because, you know, I always wonder what had happened and everything. And he was basically, here's what it is. But, you know, we go into the Hall of Fame. They want me to play. I don't care. I'll play. You know, he was being real cool about it. But I didn't know it was him and Robin that had the issue. I didn't know it was them. That was the catalyst.
I had heard that rumor, and you know, when Bunny said in the, I guess it was Rolling Stone article,
right?
Well, is it you're going to choose between your kid in kindergarten and the band? I was like,
yeah.
I was with you up until that point, but kid in kindergarten, sorry, family first.
Yeah. Well, and then, but then Bunny didn't want to play the longer shows, so it was kind of that was kind of a weird deal because, you know, he was saying that Robin wanted to play the longer shows, which Bunny didn't want to do the longer shows, but then he got mad because he didn't want to play these extended, shorter shows like the Vegas deal, what they were talking about.
Well, the longer
so
dates.
Like going, so yeah. It's like, wait a minute, you're going to say that you don't want to play the 3-hour show, but then you're going to get mad at him for his daughter's school. It's like that don't sound right. I'm like you. It didn't. Quite.
Yeah, there was something funky there. But, you know, like the daughter school thing, if you're a new band and you're 20 years old and you're trying to make it,
right?
Well, then you have to focus and you have to make it. There's no question. Yeah. You're going to have to miss weddings and funerals and you got to go.
Right. But your cheap trick.
Your cheap trick 30 years in, 40 years in, that gig in Vegas will be there next week. The promoter will... I don't know. That's when you go, okay, family first, we'll take September off this year. You're not going to go to kindergarten every year anyway, right? It's right. Only going to be 1 year. So one September, you skip it.
Yeah.
But, and whatever, can't you, build, you can build dates around some of that stuff anyway. You know, you yeah. just it's all about being strategic and planning. And But, yeah.
but
you know,
your first year out of the gate,
you focus. You got to go. It's on, full on.
40 yeah. years later... It's the dance recital. I mean, you have to, you know, you're only doing it.
You see pictures of Paul Stanley posts all the time of taking his kids to school or he's in the car line or he's, you know.
Well, they're flying back and forth to every show now. I mean, they don't even, the road stuff didn't even exist anymore.
I mean, yeah, I don't think.
That's why, you know, what you've got to that point now. You know, by gosh, you deserve it. You know?
Live it up.
You know, maybe Cheap Trick's not to that point where they can fly around to between every gig. I don't, you know, because you don't know. They're not playing huge places like some of those other guys. I don't know. Yeah, it just seems odd. So,
but it seems odd that they couldn't take in that 1 month or that yeah. 1 week or plus, you know, September is not such a great touring month for club acts. That's more like an arena act kind of month. But
yeah.
Well, hopefully they'll go to get into the Hall of Fame and play together. No, won't be any qualms or any problems. I'm, you know, for God's sake, just play. You know, just if it's even two songs, just go play a couple songs for us. You know, unlike right. some other people that we know that should have played when they went into the Hall of Fame. But you know,
you know, it's funny when Ace and Peter didn't get to play with Kiss. I was like, so what? I mean, it's.
Yeah,
the Hall of Fame's stupid anyway.
Right.
But now as we're like 3 or 4 years from, I'm like, man, it sucks they didn't play it.
It sucked. I mean, it's like, come on, you guys couldn't and just, I mean, I don't even want to see you in the makeup. Just go up there and hear some instruments, play your play two songs and you're done. That's all. You know, Peter's Peter's 70 years old now. He's at the point he can't really play anymore. You know, and I tell you, Paul hasn't got that many years left in him. I honestly don't think he's. I mean, it's. I think they've. I think they've went past their prime, but that's just my own opinion.
I think there could have been a give and take. From what I understand, the Hall of Fame was insistent that it be the original four in makeup, which I can see why you wouldn't want to do that. That's not the brand anymore. You know why would you want to push that band? That's not what you're selling to concert promoters, and at the same time. You know, Kiss should have said, we'll put all six of us up there with no makeup. We'll play the two big hits, you know, Rock and Roll All Night and Deuce or whatever. And the Hall of Fame should have said, okay, well, something's better than nothing. So I think there could have been some give and take on both. But
which they've already done that with Unplugged. I mean, they've already done that at one point. So it's not that big a deal. You know, we could have, it wouldn't have been Bruce, but, you know, but it would have been Tommy. But they've done that before. It's not that big a deal.
See, and I don't blame Kissin for this. I really don't.
No, I don't either.
I think the Hall of Fame could have just said, play with whoever, we'll take it.
Well, the Hall of Fame wasn't too happy about them getting in there anyway, I don't think. So that's my own opinion.
the fans spoke. We had a little bit of a voice, and we helped take care of it, I think. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we've been speaking for Alice Cooper. We've been speaking for Cheap Trick.
Yeah, no kidding.
Deep Purple, finally. So we're getting there.
We're getting there. Well, and I think, you know, I don't want to be on this topic forever, but, you know, as more of those bands that get in, then we'll see other bands that should be getting in. And I think that's what we're seeing now. You know, Cheap Trick and Deep Purple and those guys getting in. So
but there's
I think
still
that,
a reticence for the 80s metal. We still don't have Motley Crue. We still don't have Judas Priest. We still don't have, well, not that they're hair metal, but we still don't have Iron Maiden. At some
How does Iron Maiden not be in there? I mean, that's just crazy.
Well, how does Motley Crue not? I mean,
yeah, Motley Crue. You know,
it just doesn't make sense.
Now, do you think when Foo Fighters hit 25, they're going to be in?
Oh, see, every episode, Mitch.
I love
this is number 10, and we have had 9 episodes where we have talked about Foo Fighters.
I couldn't help.
Well, listen, Foo Fighters at some point probably do belong in there because they did have an impact.
Absolutely, they do.
And they are sort of the Rolling Stone darling. They're probably already have the plaque made. They're just waiting.
Exactly. There you go.
And they deserve it. I mean, I've said it before.
I took Bill to his first show this summer, and he was just,
dude, I'm hooked. I'm like,
I know.
They deserve it, but I would hate to see them get in before Iron Maiden.
Oh, exactly. No, I agree with you.
Totally. Those bands, and listen, like it or lump it, even Bon Jovi and Def Leppard. I mean, they were the big hair '80s guys,
right?
But Bon Jovi changed the culture, quite frankly. I mean, the whole '80s and the look and the sound. Everybody was chasing Bon Jovi. Kiss tried to sound like Bon Jovi. Def Leppard tried to sound like Bon Jovi. Unfortunately, Bon Jovi doesn't want to sound like Bon Jovi anymore, but that's another story.
See, the whole problem, though, too, now is with this is the fact of that they're going in now because
there's nobody else.
They feel like that they put everybody else in there, and now they feel like, well, okay, now we got to put them in there. And that's what sucks. You know, after 25 years, a lot of these bands should, you know, Alice should have went in years ago. Kiss should have went in years ago. All these bands at their 25th year should have went in. And now that they're going in, it's almost like it's not that much of a yay. Well, they're just putting them in there because they got to now. You know, that's what sucks about it.
Yeah, we're backing our way in there. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They'll get there. That's why I'm still not going to the building. I'm not getting my money. There you go. It doesn't matter.
Mitch, you mentioned earlier that sometimes when you talk to a publicist, they tell you not to ask an artist certain questions or whatever. That kind of leads into a question that Bill had. So you want to talk about that?
Oh yeah.
Bill.
Are there some artists you talk to that you get like a writer almost kind of thing where they say, you know, we don't want to talk about this, you want to talk about that, you know, this is a sore subject, or you know, everything's a free for all, the opposite of David Coverdale.
Yeah, sure. That absolutely happens all the time, and you have to be respectful of that. How can I answer the question without naming names? There are times where, because of legal disputes, stuff is before the court. You know, they're fighting over naming rights or labels, or mentioning the name could actually have a legal ramification that they want to avoid, either positive or negative. And so they say, don't talk about that. You know, there could be other bands where a tragedy has occurred, where something has happened, and they just would rather not have that brought back up. And you have to be respectful of that. I mean, you know, nobody wants to hear about something really horrible happening in your life and being thrown in your face by every single report. Because, I mean, you know, they're doing 18 interviews in a day sometimes. And if everybody said, tell me about the time such and such, well, hey, I want to be depressed. So you got to respect that. And there are other times where they're very clear. They're saying, hey, so-and-so is talking to you today because they're selling this album. And if you don't want to do that, then they're not talking to you. And you go, well, all right. It's either I don't talk to so-and-so, or I become holier than thou. Oh, no, it has to be the Mitch way. Or no, I mean, sometimes that's the gig, you know? And when you get the ones that are free for all, you just rejoice and enjoy it even more. But, you know, the restrictions aren't that hard. Like, you look at Alice Cooper. He says you get 15 minutes. Well, okay, you get 15 minutes. I'd rather have 15 minutes than zero.
Absolutely.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. I'd probably spend the first 10 minutes trying to figure out what to say.
Yeah.
Alice Cooper, I don't know what to do.
Well, but there is that problem with Alice Cooper because he has such a long history that whatever question you ask, there's 100 you didn't ask, and you have 100 fans going, why didn't you ask that question? And you go,
because I have 15 minutes.
I have 15 minutes. And you know, 1974 is not any more important than 1975. I got to sort of juggle it all in. And there was one time I asked Alice a question, and he had a long answer. I think it was like a 6 or 7 minute answer. And at the end of the interview, we had 3 questions done. Well, all right, I had that's better than no questions done.
Yeah.
There again, like you said, he's got a span of so many years, and it's like 15 minutes to ask. You know, you say you have to sit there and go, okay, which ones I really want to ask?
Yeah, and it's tough.
It is tough.
It's so tough because, you know. So I asked him, did he regret anything during his drunk years? And you know, I regret nothing. You know, so I got in a question that was a little controversial or whatever, a little dirty, and he dealt with it. So no, it's tough. You don't know where to go. You want to ask about this album and that album and this producer and that tour and this then the snake and the time's up.
Yep. See ya.
Yeah. So you have that restriction because, you know, sometimes in an interview, I like to build an arc. I like sort of start here and, you know, weave it over to there. And in 15 minutes, sometimes you just don't have, you don't get that arc. It's just
no arc.
Kind of like us, we're like a raft, and it just kind of goes, and it sinks halfway.
It's a canoe that flips over.
It's interesting because the guy that does the editing for us at some point cuts us off.
Yeah, that happened last week.
last week.
Like 10 minutes.
There was like 7 or 8 minutes of something that was so far off topic that it had to go.
A little pontificating and rambling.
Yeah, we had talked to each other for 2 weeks. We were like just bullshitting for a while.
So. Yeah. Too much
minutia. There you go. He's got it. Yep, a lot of it. All right, how are we doing on time, Mitch?
I'm good to go. I got nothing. My hockey team ain't playing tonight. There's no Monday night football. Let's keep going.
All right, cool.
So we had a couple more things for you.
And I still got liquids.
Yeah, there you go. Motley Crue's final show?
Yep.
What'd you think? Did you
I went to 3 of them.
You went to 3 of them? Yeah, I went to 1. Dennis and I went to 1.
It was like with the third show, fourth show?
Yeah, it was the third show in Indianapolis. It was not pretty.
Oh my God.
It was woo.
I went in August, was it? July? No, end of August. End of August and in October. So I saw sort of the middle part.
Yeah. I think they
got it together after a while, but we went, like I say, it was the fifth show I think we went and seen. Alice was just incredible. I mean, Alice is always good. It doesn't matter. You know, I was so happy to see Alice. Yeah, I would have been like
perfectly
Motley,
fine.
Motley come out and they were having all kinds of issues as far as you know, they had a lot of background stuff going on that wasn't syncing very well. I mean, their sync was very bad that night.
It was sinking, just not the way they wanted it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was very, very bad. And then, like I said, it was so funny. You know, Bill was talking about, you know, Vince comes out there, he's on fire for about 40 seconds, and then he's out of breath. I mean, he's gone. You know, it's like, dude, you know, you should have worked out a little before you went on tour. And but no, it was. I mean, and the thing that Bill and I both did that night. We were afterwards like going, there were 4 people who did not want to be together. You could just tell they were not that night. You could just tell they were there for a paycheck, and that was it.
Yeah, you can tell when a band is not gelling. I mean, you look at the Alice Cooper band that opened that; those guys were having fun.
Oh, they are having a blast.
There's an energy. You know, I went to 3 shows, and I didn't really see Motley Crue that much in all of them because I was actually backstage. Talking to other people, and so I missed a lot of it actually. But what I saw was interesting. I mean, it just seemed like a lot of smoke and mirrors and not a lot of rock and roll.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I like special effects. You know, it's nice to have a flame here and there, but when it becomes the centerpiece and overshadows the music, but hey, whatever. It's Motley Crue. They've always done that.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought the final show with the video of, you know, I thought the
drum thing?
The drum solo.
Enough to not see it in one show.
Exactly. Could pee for 15 minutes.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, it's funny because I saw them in Montreal and I saw them in, Ottawa, I guess it was. And it was Ottawa. And I saw the drum solo and I ran out to the bathroom because that's what I do during drum solos because it's a waste of my time. Yeah. But in the Quebec show, they had Glenn Sobel playing, so they hadn't set it up and they weren't going to do it. And so when it got to that spot where they were into that song that leads into the solo, they didn't do it. And I was sitting there going, oh, shoot, what do I do? Or do I just tough it out? I toughed
it out. Give me that cup.
Yeah.
When Bill and I saw the show earlier that summer, it was at a shed up here in Indianapolis, so they didn't have the roller coaster that we saw the show that they didn't have it set up. So, but it was, you know, I don't think, we didn't miss anything. That was the whole point, you know.
No, he did a drum solo, so I got to go anyway. So it didn't matter.
Pardon?
Did he do a drum solo anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But he didn't do the.
No roller coaster.
It wasn't as extended.
No.
So it wasn't too bad.
You know, people keep saying Mitch hates drum solos. No, I don't hate drum solos all the time, given the context. You go to a Rush show, that's part of the show because that's what they do, the musicians. But when you're seeing
Neil Peart, you want to see.
Yeah, sure. And when you're seeing Motley Crue and when you're seeing Kiss, and I would rather hear them play, you know, Got to Choose,
right,
than hear a drum solo.
Exactly.
I would rather hear another Poison song that's been a top 10 hit than skip a song and give me a solo. Same with Motley Crue. How many of us left that Motley Crue show this summer and went, oh, I wish they had played?
Well, oh, yeah, exactly. But
they hadn't done that drum solo. They could have played Red Hot, and they could have played two other ones, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or whatever songs they made.
I mean, take Kiss back in the 80s. I mean, everybody did a solo back then, so you had four solos. You know?
Then you had Paul Stanley's Love Gun Rat. That was 10 minutes there.
I think they did. I think on that tour they did like 14 songs. If you look at the list, it was like 14. I'm like, really?
Really? Yeah.
But Kiss is sort of like going to a football game. There's little spurts of action, and then there's a lot of standing around, and right. And that's unfortunate because they have such a vast catalog. Even in 75 minutes, if they cut out the solos, they can still deliver 18 songs.
Yeah, easily.
You know, and if they do a 90-minute show and they cut out the solos, you'd get 21 songs. And you go, well, Paul can't sing. Okay, whatever.
You know, have Gene sing a few
more. Paul didn't have to sing. You know, to be honest with you, I don't know. Yeah, who care? I don't care anymore, really. I mean, I get it. I get that he can't sing. So if Eric sings some of his stuff, so what? I don't think that's a big takeaway.
And the problem is if Paul's having that much issue of singing, why in the hell is he doing that acoustic set before the show? You know, save your voice. And the other thing is, he don't have to be screaming and how you people doing? You know, shut your mouth and rest your voice and sing the damn song. You know, it's just like.
But I look at somebody like John Bon Jovi, who used to do that also in the 80s with the long speeches and stuff.
Right.
He's cut back significantly on that stuff because he knows he has to save what he's got. And so as you get older, the way you play the game changes. That's perfectly normal. And nobody would hold that against anybody if they did that. And you know, listen, I'm not even suggesting that Eric Singer sings Paul songs, but throw in Strange Ways. Throw in Manline.
Oh, have and yeah, exactly.
Have him do Nothing to Lose all the way through and blah, blah, blah for all the diehards. Sing Beth. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care.
do Hooligan. You know, so what? Do his songs up from Sonic Boom and Monster.
Right.
But it's not what it is. Everybody knows that a 4-minute Gene-based noodling is exactly what everybody wants.
That's another piss break for me. So,
You know, the thing that saves me now from that stuff is I've started taking people that have never went before, just so they can, you know, you've got to go see them. They're not like everybody else. You know, it's going to be different.
True.
So, for me, I get more excitement out of watching other people react that have never seen them before.
Right.
You're taking a 42-year-old guy to a show, and he's like just. How did I not ever see this before? I don't know. It's under a rock, but you know, for me, that's more important. Now, you know, I have a I have a 15-year-old that he's seen him, I think, now 4 or 5 times, and it's watching him. I mean, he just loves it. So I think, you know, that is as much about it as, because I know when I go to the show, I know which 17 songs we're going to hear, because it's the same 17 songs we've heard the last 17 years. So I get it, but I found my enjoyment of going to shows is watching the other people that are going with me.
Well, the last few really has been about taking my kids.
Right.
Yeah. That's what really made it, having the kids see them and sort of having that, hey, I saw Kiss when I was, whatever, 10, I guess it was the first time. I saw Kiss when I was 10. And if you had told me when I was 10 years old that I would have my own kids at a Kiss show, I'd be like, I ain't going to have kids. Leave me alone. and then I got to bring them. That was kind of special, right? It's sort of like a full circle kind of thing. So yeah, I might not even have gone, quite frankly. Or I might not have traveled. I probably would always go to a show locally, but...
Right. But, it's funny. Yeah, I took my... You're talking about your son. My son's really not really into music. I mean, he's into things, but just not into music that much. So his first concert, I took him to see Alice, actually. He was there. And that's when he was doing that. It was during the Dirty Diamonds. And then at the very end, he was doing like the whole Nightmare section. And actually, Eric Singer was playing drums. So it was like a double bonus deal. And he starts doing the Nightmare. And my son's like sitting there. And I'm like going, dude, not only you don't know what you're seeing, this is the coolest shit you've ever going to see. You better get into this, you know? But he was like, oh, yeah, it's okay. You know, he chopped his head off. I'm like, I'm sitting there going,
oh, my Lord.
Oh, I'm like, you know, if my dad would have took me when I was that age, you know, I'd have been flipping out. Because I remember, you know, on the school bus, my neighbor kid, I gave him my Destroyer album to take home, and he gave me Alice Cooper Show. And I took it home, and I was like, I just kept looking at the cover going, this is the greatest thing ever, you know. And I was into Alice hooked at that point. Alice, yeah, my son, he just didn't get it. He's like going, yeah, okay.
You see, Alice still delivers. Like, you know that it's choreographed because he has certain spots that he has to get the guillotine and this and that. And yet he still manages to switch out on every leg of the tour. Not even every tour. Every leg of the tour, he'll switch out 3 or 4 songs. You'll hear Clones. You'll hear Feed My Frankenstein. You'll hear... And Kiss, no. You know, Metallica. Metallica switches 8 songs per night. Actually, literally 8 songs per night.
Right.
Not a problem. The spotlights work, and then the Kiss, well, it's choreographed to this and that and this one, and the pyro. Bullshit. Metallica switches. You know, Pearl Jam switches. Bruce Springsteen switches. All these people have light shows and technical and all kinds of stuff, and they manage.
And they're programmed per song. And there's a guy back there who's working those lights. So if you want to go off script one night and play a song, the dude knows how to work the damn stuff. So he can do this. You know, it may not – okay, maybe you don't have flames or maybe you don't have that. But you know what? I'd rather hear the song and not see the flames, you know. But
Metallica has a laser light show, flames, right. The whole deal. And they still switch 8 songs a night. And you know why? Because they hired a professional road crew. And a professional road crew at that level can handle anything. And the Kiss crew is one of those crews that could handle anything. So test them. Let's go. Right. Let's, you know, let's move along. It's you know, happen. Anybody on that Kiss crew is an ultra professional. That's why they're on a Kiss crew. They could handle Paul, you know, singing Hide Your Heart one night and whatever, Who Wants to Be Lonely the next night. They're not going to, you know, pass out.
And the thing is, we heard for years the fact of, oh, the reason we can't change songs is we have Peter and Ace who only know these certain songs. Okay, now you got Tommy and Eric who can play just about anything. What's your excuse now?
And they did it on the 2004 tour. They were pulling out songs every night. It was absolutely glorious. And then all of a sudden, oh, well, you know, come on.
I took my son to the 2004 tour.
It was a great tour. It was an absolutely phenomenal tour. Made me fall in love with Tommy Thayer. I went, oh, thank God, we're hearing Parasite. We're hearing The Tears Are Falling. We're hearing all kinds of stuff that we haven't heard. And now it's, well, you know, not everybody's a diehard.
Oh, gosh.
Well, while we're on the topic of Kiss, which is your favorite Kiss lineup, Mitch?
Ooh, that's a tough one. You know... It's going to have to be the original with Ace and Peter. It was magical in the 70s. If you want to think musically, I really like the Revenge lineup quite a bit. I think that lineup is fantastic. That 92 show that I saw at the Montreal Forum was magical because I had seen Kiss on tours in the 80s, and it just, there was something missing. It just, it wasn't like that exciting. It was, you know, Bruce was not Bruce of the Revenge era. He was a little shy, a little more trepidatious. You know, Eric Carr was a good basher, but there was something, and the songs that they were playing was very limited in scope, and it was like, let's just sort of stick to the new stuff. And on Revenge, you got all the old stuff, and you got the double bass drum, and it was just wild. It was fantastic.
And Gene looked like a mean bass player again instead of a big, ugly woman.
Well, yeah, he didn't look like VR. Yeah, that was, and that's another thing I forgot. The look in the 80s was a little wrong, too. Revenge was perfect, but if it wasn't for Ace and Peter, I wouldn't have been a Kiss fan. I mean, if it wasn't for the first album, exactly, and Strutter and Cold Gin, and I mean, if you look at it, here we are 40 years later. The first album is essentially what they play in its entirety every night.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, that's whenever they announce on the Kiss Cruise are going to play Alive, you know, Alive. It's like, you do that.
The only thing I paid money to do that I would have liked to see was that deal where they played in the suits. I think that would be that dress.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
I would love to seen that. You know, but I think
on the cruise, which, you know, I've never been on and I never plan on going on, it would be nice if they said, okay, we're going to do the makeup stuff with the songs you know, right. But one night is going to be, you know, the Revenge songs, even if it's with Tommy. But why not invite Bruce for one night of an hour of they play the old stuff? Is that really going to hurt the brand and confuse the market?
It's not, though. That's all
right. The people that are on the cruise are Kiss fans. They know the history. It would be like extra, extra, extra special.
But I mean, Eric's there. Eric was already there. All you're going to do is add Bruce in. And, you know, Tommy's not going to say nothing about it. It's just going to be... You know, it's ridiculous. You know?
I have a hard time believing that Tommy Thayer would have a meltdown because Bruce on the cruise for three nights, you know, 1 hour, is going to play five Revenge songs. You have to give him a little more credit than that. I mean, I'm sure he's not that fragile. In fact, I know he's not that fragile.
Yeah, I mean, the interviews I've seen with him and stuff like that, I just don't see Tommy being that kind of a guy. No. I just don't see him. I don't see. I don't believe he is that kind of. I got the superstar ego thing.
Well, he worked up, dude. I seen him at the conventions getting coffee and running wires and stuff like that. I mean, he was a gopher.
Down to earth. I mean, nice.
He worked his way up, and now he's got to this point. But he's not, like you said. He's not got some kind of superstar image. I mean, that's just, you know, he's doing all these, a lot of charitable stuff. You know, with his, you know, he does these golf scrambles for charities and stuff. I mean, he's a good guy, you know.
And that would be a very unique thing to do.
Yeah.
You're never going to see the Revenge lineup again except on cruise number 6. You go, "Oh, okay. That's interesting, you know?"
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right.
One-on-one. Did you have any three sides of the coin questions?
Well, I mean, the only question I had was, you know, I was kind of curious a couple of things, really. One, you know, how did it get started? Because I wasn't sure how the three of you guys got together. And then when you did leave, what was the decision? I want to go do my own stuff, wasn't working
that's
anymore.
That's what I knew about you, too. I mean, I watched that, you know, we watched that for a long time. And then all of a sudden, one day, it was like, Mitch quit. I'm like...
Yeah. I think my wife can probably tell you when that day was too.
No, but we were doing, Michael and I, you know, we had known each other from the Kiss Otaku days and the old Kiss lists that used to be on email and stuff like that, and I think even the AOL group, like, you know, early 90s, and we started this show called Dropping the Needle, where we were going to start talking about different albums and different things and different stuff. And for some reason, the conversation always came back to us comparing something to Kiss. It was always like, so the new so-and-so, yeah, well, you know, Kiss did that. And it's like, okay. And so we had this rule where on Dropping the Needle, we're not going to talk about Kiss all the time because this is not a Kiss show, it's a music show. And it just sort of ended up always being Kiss. And so Michael got the idea of, well, why don't we do a Kiss show, and then we'll do Dropping the Needle as Dropping the Needle, and we'll do Kiss show as a Kiss show. And he said, I think I know somebody. And he brought in Tommy, who's a longtime friend of his, and we started it up. And it was going well. And as it was going on, I had suggested the first two producers, you know, all of a sudden I'm forgetting their names, the producer of the first two Kiss albums. Do we remember their names? I forget all of a sudden. Kerner and Wise, Richie Wise and I said, Kerner. Hey, Ken Kerner and yeah. Richie, I said, I can get them in for interviews. And they went, no, it's not interesting. I went,
really?
What? A Kiss podcast? Talking to the guys who were there, and that's not interesting? I went, excuse me? And when I had gotten Bruce Kulick on, if you look at the episode with Bruce, one of the hosts sits back and sort of just is not really into it. Well, because they didn't want them on, they thought, oh, Bruce does a million things, nobody's going to want to listen then.
Wow.
And there was a couple of situations like that, and I was like, but that's well, this is not an interview show. It's three guys talking. And I go, yeah, but sometimes we talk, and sometimes if there's a guest, that's part of the conversation too. I mean, a guy who was actually in the trenches,
sure,
it seems to be a smart decision. No, it's three guys in a bar just talking about Kiss. That's the concept. And I went, but that seems like a limited concept. Anyway, listen, let's call it creative differences, right? That's what happens right. When bands break up. And it drove me a little nutty. And as we went on in the shows, I got a sense that I wasn't an equal third partner. I got a sense that I was sort of the butt of everybody's jokes. And got picked on a lot of times. There was one episode where we reviewed three books, and we had reviewed the Nothing to Lose book, and I had made some points that the first 10 chapters were kind of boring.
Oh, and I agree. I agree totally with that. I can't get through that book.
well, the thing is that only at that time, only one of the three people had actually read the book. Me. The other two hadn't. And so I knew that I was getting beaten up over nonsense, and I was like, and so I didn't say anything because, you know, when you're part of the team, if you expose that, then everything else unravels. And if everything else unravels, well, you unravel too because you're part of that team. And I went, really? You know, you really need to slack up here because I read the book. You haven't. So, and so that kept getting, you know, and show me the Kiss vault and all. It's like, yeah, well, you know what? That's interesting, but I can't be digging around my basement every fucking Tuesday for
Mitch's locker, right?
and that was, to me, that was starting to get tiresome. And at some point, you know, it was finite. At some point, I was going to run out of stuff, and then what? You know, and that was starting to become, oh, it's cheap Spencer crap. And it's like, well, listen. That's the stuff that's lying around. I'm not going into the crawl space. I'm not. I'm not unpacking boxes so I can flip it on the screen for 30 seconds and then have to forget it. It's too labor intensive for a gag, you know. And so that was annoying. The constant ganging up of two against one started getting annoying. Not that I can't take it, but at some point I was also doing the other interviews. And I was conscious of the public image. I didn't want to be the buffoon. I still had to have, you know, Mitch the interviewer. I couldn't be Mitch the buffoon because then that hurts the other part of what I do.
Sure.
So I was just like, you know what, it's not rewarding for me anymore. It's now become your thing. And you know, there are other issues too. You know, one person controlled the video and the editing and the presentation and how it got out there.
We got one of those.
Yeah, which is nice, but at some point, you need to be in control of how you portray yourself, too. You can't always let somebody else edit and cut and paste. And so
yeah, you remember that, Al.
Yeah, don't be the troublemaker.
Yeah, exactly. Thankfully, Al has saved Dennis's butt on more than one occasion.
Yeah, I have my mouth gets a little runny sometimes, and I have to be edited.
Yeah. So now I just made a decision. It was very spontaneous. I don't even remember how I think I phoned Tommy and I said I'm not doing this anymore. I'm out. I think that's how it went down. I don't really remember how I quit. I just remember going, I'm done. Right. And I was done. And there was no disrespect. They went on with the show, and I haven't watched it since. Not a single minute, not a single episode. No disrespect. Which, by the way, I kind of understand when I interview a rock star and say, didn't you follow whatever, the Scorpions after you left? And they go, no. And before I'd go, what do you mean, no? Come on, you're lying. Of course you did. And now I go, oh, yeah, I get it. On the Kiss, even on that Kiss tribute album that we talked about earlier, people sometimes say, oh, who did you have play on it? And I go,
I don't know.
I got to think about that for a minute.
Yeah, hold on a second. They go, oh, that song, whatever, well, I Stole Your Love, you had so-and-so. And I go, yeah, hold on. And so I never realized that, but when you hear Paul Stanley go, this is from Rock and Roll Over, and he got it wrong.
Right.
You know what? I get it now. I get how you can forget that. I never understood it before, but now I go, oh, yeah, that's right. I haven't thought about that album in a couple of years. Yeah. I see how that happened. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think it ended because it had to end. And the first thing I did out of the shoot is I did the Kenny Kerner interview. I did the Richie Wise interview. I put him right out. And I did a couple of other Kiss-related ones. And then I thought, you know what? I can't just be doing Kiss-related stuff all the time. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
And, doing interviews and then transcribing them and turning them into the written form for Brave Words and for other avenues became too time consuming. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to do these interviews. I'm going to put them out as is. I'm not going to edit them. It's going to be this free for all thing where it'll be a conversation. It'll be one-on-one, right? With Mitch LaFon, which is exactly what it is. And people can sort of be voyeurs. They can tune in and listen in to my private phone conversation and listen to what's going on, or they can listen to snippets, and that's what it is. And I like that. I prefer that, and I prefer the ability to interview Halford. And it doesn't always have to be, well, what's Halford's connection to Kiss? I don't know.
They opened for Kiss on a tour.
They opened for him.
Yeah, I know, but you
them and everybody else.
I've always got to have the, with Three Sides, it always had to have a Kiss connection. It's like, I don't know.
Always have to have, because. Yeah.
Not
Priest it stands on its own. You don't need Kiss to back
right.
Priest up.
That's a fact.
And I like what I do. I interviewed Uli John Roth, earlier this year, and it was great. It was slated for 20 minutes. It went an hour and 15, and it went all over the place. It wasn't just Scorpion, and it was great. Sometimes I listen back and I go, wow, that was one hell of a left turn, and that was really a lot more interesting than, so you played on Taken by Force. Tell me about the studio. It almost got very metaphysical today, which was kind of weird. I still talk to Tommy over at Three Sides. He's a good dude, a good guy, and others are upset with me for having quit. So,
It is what it is, brother.
It is, and it's your life. You can do with it what you want. That's the good part.
Yeah, and they can be upset with me all they want to. At some point, I guess you have to sort of, reel it in and say, "All right, it's enough now."
I listened to a couple episodes after you left, and when they were trying to find the new guy, and I don't ever. I mean,
the Vinnie Vincent years.
Yeah.
No, actually, I listened to him just here.
I mean, I didn't hear anything that was, at all that I would say was disrespectful or mean. It really wasn't mentioned much. So, in any personal level at all. But I just quit listening. I just couldn't. I got to the point where I couldn't I know Dennis still listens, but I just can't.
I do on occasions, and like I said, they even mentioned you the other day. They said something about it's good because they were talking about the history, or it was their year-end show, and they were talking about Mitch and it's like they didn't say anything bad whatsoever. It was just like, hey, Mitchy was a part of the very beginning of it, and blah blah blah, and just left it at that. There was nothing about, this is what happened here. It was just, he was a part of this. He helped build it up to where it is now, and blah blah blah. And it's, like I said, I listen to it because it's something I can, it gives me something to listen to. A lot of times it's background, but it is what it is.
And that's a good thing. There's a lot of this stuff out there, a lot of podcasts that a lot of different people listen to. They get a lot of different angles on things, and people can like what they like and not like what they don't like. And oftentimes on this show we'll say, if you like it, great. If you don't like it, it's our show.
I certainly hope I haven't said anything disrespectful about them in the last 10 minutes.
No, I don't think so at all.
And they've been very good about that. It hasn't been a bash fest all over the internet. No. And I haven't done that either. If you I know some of you are on my Facebook and stuff. I haven't posted, those clowns or all the... Because there's no... I mean, at the end of the day, we're not 12, right? And if a business relationship doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. Right. You don't go around slamming somebody because... Yeah. So you know.
No, you haven't said nothing bad whatsoever. No, it was just... No, it's...
So we're getting pretty close to over an hour, I think. So Mitch, what do you think about
bedtime?
Yeah. No, I just want to be respectful of time and
that kind of stuff.
So
I'm going to be watching late night hockey all night. I got the West Coast games coming up, so I'll be
there. You go. Any bands coming up that you've heard recently that you're just like on fire with? Just to kind of close, and we kind of talk about this at the end of our show, kind of what have you heard recently that you're just really excited about? I think that we've kind of heard of a couple of different things that all of us have got a little bit jazzed on. Even some old stuff that we kind of resurrected. DAD was a band that Alan kind of
out of Denmark.
Yeah. Kind of turned us on to, I've gotten to a new band called Saint Ansonia, which is,
I know what that is.
Yeah, lead singer from Three Days of Grace, the guitar player from Stained. I kept listening to it, and I was like, that voice sounds – it's. I just love that voice. And all of a sudden, I saw that, and I was like, well, duh, because I got all the other stuff. I should have known that. But is there any bands out there right now that you're just – like, this is it. Best thing?
There are three that really get me that have me all excited. And I'll start with one that's more of an old school one. It's the Black Star Riders, which, was the band that was touring as Thin Lizzy for years, and then they decided we're going to make a new album. And online fans sort of said, well, you can't call it Thin Lizzy because Phil's not there. So they called it Black Star Riders. And what that did, it liberated them to not have to make a Thin Lizzy album. They could sort of bring in the new with the old. And they've done two albums. The last one in 2015 was called The Killer Instinct. It's my number one album of 2015. In fact, it's just brilliant. I loved it. I loved every minute of it. Then there's a new band out of Atlanta called The Biters. They released their debut album in 2015 called Electric Blood, and it really sounds like 70s Cheap Trick was blended with 70s Kiss.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Wow.
Check it out.
And the album is, I'm trying to think, it's like 32 minutes. It's one of those old school albums, like every song is like 2 minutes long kind of thing.
Sure.
And the tone of the guitars and the vocals, and it just sounds like Cheap Trick with Paul Stanley singing. I don't know how to, it just sounds like that 70s arena rock all jammed together. Mm. And it's great. If you like those bands, you have to listen to The Biters. They're out of Atlanta. They're on tour now. They're going to go open up in England for some 41, and they're doing it right. And that album is just great. And then the last one is a new band. Their debut album actually comes out in February of 2016. The band is called Inglorious, and the singer there is Nathan James. He was on a TV show in the UK that I don't know if he won, but he was a participant. And he sounds exactly like David Coverdale when he sings.
Really? Wow.
and the band is great. So, you know, they have two videos up on YouTube, the band. And in fact, they have two videos from the album that's coming out in February on YouTube, but they've got the band doing Fool for Your Loving, doing Burn, doing a whole bunch of us, doing Sweet Child of Mine. They've got Nathan thing. And Nathan, the singer, was Uli John Ross singer on the Scorpions Revisited album. So there's all that pedigree going on. But so The Biters, Inglorious, and Black Star Riders. In fact, I think I have the Black now, Stars.
The Black Star Riders, is that the one that Phil's mom said that there was, she kind of blessed the whole band whenever it went back out?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember whenever they, after Phil, they got this back together again, that she said, yeah, you know, you got my blessing to go ahead and to tour as Thin Lizzy and all that stuff. So,
yeah, yeah. And it was smart of them to change the name.
It is. I mean, you can only go so – I mean, Phil's been dead. What was it? I just saw today. It was, what, it's been 30 years. 30 years since the past. So, yeah.
I mean, I know, you know, on a marquee, the brand name Thin Lizzy, that can work, and you're doing all the Thin Lizzy songs, sure. But if you're going to record new material –
gotta have a new name. It's
especially for that band. When the iconic figure of the band passes away, you just can't slap the Thin Lizzy name on some new songs and say, hey, here it is.
Well, same way with Queen. You know, you can keep touring as Queen, and you can have whoever you want to do it. But if you put out another album and it's not Freddie Mercury, it's not Queen.
Yeah, and that's why they're doing it right. It's Queen with Adam Lambert. It's Queen with Paul Rogers. That's fine.
Speaking of that, have you heard of a band called the Struts?
I have. They opened up for Motley Crue.
Yeah, and I've heard that song a million times on this alternative station when I go to work in the morning, but I'd never seen their video. That dude looks like Freddie Mercury.
He does.
It has a kind of a Freddie sound. I saw it today, and I was kind of excited. I was like, going, that's kind of cool. So I'm going to check these guys out for some of their other stuff.
Yeah, they're an interesting band. They're on my radar because I saw them open for Motley. I didn't see them open for Motley. I saw that they opened for Motley, and I checked out the videos. And they've got this Freddie Mercury. What are you laughing at, my Freddie Mercury?
I'm laughing at Dennis.
Why? What did I do?
You're just being Dennis.
Oh.
Anyway. No, but anyway, the Struts are.
See, I'm being picked on. I'm the Mitch of the group here.
I know. Isn't that a horrible? I'm trying to see. I have my killer instincts around here somewhere. I keep it close.
I know. I keep talking. I shouldn't be. I'm doing my. I don't know when to shut up. So I got to be quiet.
No, it's hard. It's hard to know when we wrap up these things. Where is my killer instinct album? Oh, see, I don't have them. All I have next to me is all my Scorpions. Look at that. Isn't that gorgeous? Tokyo Tapes.
Ooh, that's cool.
The deluxe re-edition from Japan. All right. Anyway, any last questions? Because I'll go all night.
I do have one more.
All right.
So you just made a comment about, you know, that it needs to be Adam Lambert with Queen and Paul Rogers with Queen. So the whole idea of Kiss 2.0 – What's your theory about that? I personally think that when Paul's done, it's
there's
over.
No Paul. There's no Paul.
It's just done. I don't want to see anybody else in that makeup. I really don't. I really didn't care about seeing somebody else in Ace's makeup and Peter's makeup. I got into the band in 1977, so I've been with them for a long time. I liked it when they had the different characters, but then when they went back to the old one, I got it. It didn't really matter to me. But Paul or Gene, that's a different. Different game.
Spyro in that. Spyro can be Gene. I've seen another Gene,
but not
Paul.
Right.
I've never seen another Gene.
I think I'm done. I'm done. Then it's over.
You know, that's a good question. I'm not done if they don't call it Kiss exactly. If they call it Kiss the Review, Kiss the Musical,
Kiss
the Broadway Show, Kiss the Vegas Show. Like, if it's Kiss to something, I'm there. But if they say it's Kiss, it's like, well, no. That's not Kiss. But if they say, hey, it's Kiss the Musical Review, okay, it's Kiss the Musical Review.
Yeah, I agree.
I go to the whatever, you know, honky-tonk saloon, and I see Kiss for an hour and a half. Okay, I'm in. Why not? I want to hear the music live.
It's another tribute band, basically.
Yeah, but that's okay.
But I mean, if you can't be Kiss.
No.
Once it's done, I think. Right.
It cannot be Kiss, even if Tommy and Eric stick around, which I don't think they necessarily would, you know. But if they did, it still wouldn't be Kiss, but Kiss the Musical review. Okay. Yeah. Why not? An evening of Kiss music. Okay. There you go. I'm in. Why not? I like Kiss music, so why would I not want to go see that? Played by guys that were chosen by the band that must be at a professional level way beyond a tribute band. Okay, why not?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really going to be in the semantics for me. It really is going to be on the marketing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree.
You put Adam Lambert in Queen and say, this is Queen. I go, no. This is Queen with Adam Lambert? Oh, yeah. Okay, that's what it is. It's Queen with Adam Lambert. Okay. you see, you know, it's nuanced and it's perhaps a bit silly, but that's the way I feel. It's truth in marketing, I guess.
Yep. I would agree.
So there you go. But check out the Biters. Go. Anybody have Spotify or anything like that?
Oh no, my God. Dennis needs to get some endorsement. We should be getting money from Spotify. Spotify. God.
I call it
Dave Grohl owes you money, and so does Spotify.
I refer to it the service that I use to listen to my music, because I always mention Spotify.
It's great. Spotify is the greatest thing ever. I mean, it's really awesome. And I pay for it. I pay $9 and something a month. I mean, that's
it's a great service.
It is. It's an awesome service. See, screw you guys.
Well, hey, Mitch, we have really enjoyed having you on the show. We appreciate you actually being our very first guest.
Right, there you go. See, it's not so bad having a guest on the show.
No, and
that's been the plan all along, is to start having guests. But we wanted to get a few shows under our belt, figure out what we were doing so we can look as little foolish as possible. I mean, for us, it's impossible not to look at least a little foolish, but that's okay.
To be our first guest was really cool. When I messaged you and you said, sure, I'll do it, I was like, I was in Target shopping. I'm like, what? And my wife's like, what's wrong? I said, I got to go sit down for a minute.
You know, listen, I love talking.
It's awesome.
I love talking music. It's the essence of life.
Well, maybe someday we'll have to do part two, and we'll just talk about music. We won't have to talk. We can just talk about. We'll listen to the new bands, and we'll get back together sometime, and maybe just chat about this stuff.
We'll talk about whenever the Guns N' Roses thing explodes about halfway through the tour. We'll talk about that. And
three shows in.
Halfway through?
Whenever Sammy gets back with Van Halen, and that explodes, and about halfway through.
Van Hager.
Oh God.
That would be entertaining if they got back together in 2017 or whatever. No, who knows?
If Eddie read that book that Sammy wrote, it's never going to happen. I think
roasted
it's
him.
So good. The Eagles said all kinds of nasty things to each other. Guns N' Roses.
That's true.
Axl caused
hell froze over, and they got back together again. So who knows?
You know, the Motley Crue stuff. They Tommy and Vince publicly on MTV, whatever, one of them had a reality show. They were slinging dirt all day long. He's a big this. He's a big that. He's a loser this and a loser. You know what?
Show him the money.
Exactly right.
Flash the green before my eyes.
I think it's partly money, and I think it's also age. Listen, when you were 20, I'm sure there's the neighbor down the street that you wanted to bash his face in because he was a pain in the butt. And now if you saw him, you'd say, hey, Billy, how's it going?
Exactly.
Right? I mean, at some point, you just can't keep that anger forever and that nonsense forever. And the money.
Money's
good. Somebody flashes $100 million in my face. He'll be like, oh, but you have to go work with this. Be like, yeah, all right. $100 million?
I need to talk to who?
I'll be the buffoon.
I'll be the buffoon. You want to see my Kiss locker? Here it is. All right. Yeah. Spencer Crap.
All right. Well, thanks, Mitch. I really appreciate it. It's been a great time. I really enjoyed it. Great getting to know you a little bit more, and hopefully some of our listeners and some of your listeners will get to know a little bit different side of you. So that'd be kind of cool.
Yep.
So
the late night tired side of me.
All right. That's a wrap on the episode with Mitch LaFon, the one-on-one with Mitch LaFon. I hope you enjoyed it. We had a great time. You can tell we had a great time. part two? That'd be fun. We'll have to see. I think next time we'll just talk about music and stuff like that, but it's great to get to know him a little bit better. Like I said, had a blast. I think you guys have a blast.
Yes. Yes. It was two thumbs up.
It was awesome. Thanks, Mitch. We really appreciate you spending some time with us tonight. And, we will definitely be taking care and getting you out on our Facebook page at the Ages of Rock podcast. And we will get on yours, which is Mitch LaFon, one-on-one with Mitch LaFon. So till next week, enjoy it and give us some feedback. Don't forget to leave us some feedback. We want to hear from you. Rock and roll, people.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.